We return to the story of Samuel, and you will recall we left him last week at the pinnacle of his career. He is the fully fledged prophet of the Lord, respected by all and heeded by all, from Dan in the north to Bethel in the south. He is regarded as the leader both in peace and in war. But of course he's had tragedy. We saw that. Isolated from his parents at a very young age. His first call is to pronounce doom on the man who has proved it was his foster father. He has to witness it. He witnesses the capture of the Ark of the Lord. Unthinkable. But of course God has plans for that. And the Philistines discover that it's no easy treasure to keep. They suffered for it. And eventually, of course, it was returned and found a resting place in a city called Kiriat Yarim, the city of forests, where it remained until David ultimately removed it to Jerusalem. But that was the end of the shrine of Shiloh. Shiloh, which had flourished already from the early part of the conquest of the land, as we saw from the famous story of the Pilegesh Begiva, terrible story read about the concubine whose husband cuts her up, and there was a festival to the Lord at Shiloh already at that time. Samuel is brought up there, he's educated there. It is eliminated, it ceases to exist. So all of this is part of Samuel's background. But just in case you thought things couldn't get worse, they did. And we take up the story with Samuel confronting another crisis. Now it's the 3rd sheet. I'm sorry, forgive me.
What page?
Pardon? Yes, I'll give you page numbers. Let me just locate it for you because I don't want to mislead you. But it is. You should have page 434 at the top right hand side, 435 at the top left hand side, chapter 8. Vayihi kasher zaken Shmuel, and it was when Samuel was old, Vayasim et banav shoftim liYisrael, he appointed his sons to be judges over Israel. He has dynastic aspirations. He wants his sons to take over. But Vayihi Shem Beno Habachor Yoel, his older son was called Yoel, Bashem Bishnehu Aviyah, and his second son was called Aviyah, Shoftim Biver Yitshava, operating as judges in Beersheba. However, Velo Halchu Vana Bidrachav, his sons did not walk in his ways. Sometimes famous fathers can have children less worthy of them, especially those in public life. Vayitu achare abatza, and they inclined after ill-gotten gain. They were exploiting their office to their own financial advantage. Vayiku shochad, and they were taking bribes. Vayatu mishpat, and they diverted the course of justice. Does this remind you of Eli and his two sons? And we don't have any evidence in the text that Samuel was doing too much to correct his boys either.
But he was somewhere else, though.
Pardon? Well, he lived in Ramah, and he was a circuit judge. The reputation of these young men was reaching throughout the country. It was no secret. And look at the impact. Vayitkabtsu kol ziknei Yisrael. So all the elders of the people of Israel came together, the senators. Vayavohu el Shmuel haramata, and they went to Shmuel at Ramah, where he lived. Vayomru elav, and they said to him, Hineata zakanta, you're an old man now. Uvanecha lo halchu bidrachecha, your sons have not walked in your ways. Ata now, sima lanu melech, appoint a king for us. L'shofteinu, to judge us, kechol ha-goyim, like all the other nations. This is not a request. They're not saying please. In fact, they're not being at all deferential. They are demanding. Sima is an intensive form of the imperative. Banging on the table, a point! No discussion over it. Vayera hadava b'enei Shmuel. And the matter was very distressing to Samuel. Kasher amru, when they said, Tana lanu melech, give us a king, l'shoftenu, to judge over us. Vayifalel Shmuel el Adonai, and so Samuel prays to the Lord. Vayomer Adonai Shmuel, and the Lord said to Samuel, Shema b'kol ha'am, listen to the people, l'chol asher yomru elecha, in whatever they say to you, ki lo otecha ma'asu, because they're not just rejecting you, ki oti ma'asu mimloch aleihem, they are rejecting me from being their king over them. Don't take it so personally, man, it's an insult to me too. And this is well in line with the way they behaved since the days I brought them out of Egypt until this day. They forsook me. Worshipped other gods. Just as they played me up, now they're doing the same to you. So Samuel, don't get too upset. You're in good company. Despite this,
listen to them.
Achai ta'id bahem, but you must give them full testimony. Va'agid alahem, and inform them mishpat ha'melech, the nature of kingship, the manner of a king. Hashem meluch aleihem, who will reign over them. I'll stop at this point because we're clearly confronted here with two big issues. Issue number one, why were they asking for a king? Well, it's already revealed in the text that when they look forward to what was coming after Samuel went, they said, we're not having it. We're not going to have two young retrobates running our affairs. But why demand a king?
To be like the other people.
Well, to be like the other people.
And to be a whole country.
To be a whole country. In fact, Samuel was the victim of his own success. Because until Samuel came along, as we said before, they were disparate tribes. He has united them. He, the second Moses, has brought them together, gave them a national awareness, gave them a national identity. And so now what are they saying? Give us that ultimate expression of nationality, of nationhood. We want the splendor of monarchy. We demand it. That brings me to my second question. So why is Samuel and why is God so displeased? And I ask that question in the light of something I want to read to you. You know we have a constitution. It's called the Torah. And in chapter 17 of the book of Deuteronomy, we have the constitution for monarchy. And I'll read it to you. Ki tavo el haaretz. When you will come to the land, Moses says to the people, Asher Adonai lehecha noten lach, which the Lord your God is giving you, v'irishtan, you will take possession of it, v'yashavta ban, you will settle therein, v'amarta, and you will say, Asima alai melech, I would appoint over me a king, k'chol agoyim ashis v'otai, like all the nations which surround me. Notice the similarity of the words in the Torah with the actual expression made and the appeal made by the people. And says our constitution, Som tasim alecha melech, you shall indeed appoint a king over you. That is your prerogative. However, you don't choose. Asher yivcha Adonai Elohecha bo, whom the Lord your God will choose, through the agency of a prophet. Mikerev achecha tasim alecha melech, you shall appoint your king from among your fellow Israelites. Lo tuchal latet alecha ish nochri, under no circumstances may you appoint a pagan to rule over you, asher lo achicha, who is not your brother. You may want to copy the monarchy of surrounding nations, you can't take them as your rulers. Rak lo yarbe lo susim, however, he may not increase his hold of horses. He may not have too many horses. Lo yashivat ha'am Mitzrayim, and he mustn't take the people back to Egypt. Leman harbutz, in order to increase the number of his horses. Egypt was a recognized source for good animals. And why not? Vadonai amalachem, because God has told you, lo tosifun lashub baderech hazeod. You should never go back down that route. Velo yarbelo nashim. He may not have too many wives. No big harem. Why? Velo yasulavavo. So his heart and mind should not be distracted. A large harem can be a hotbed of politics that will divert the king from his true path. Moreover, v'chesiv as ahav lo yarbelo meod. He's not allowed to accumulate too much gold and silver. That's interesting. The bankers take note. V'haya, moreover, k'shivto al kisei mamlachto, when he sits upon his royal throne, v'chatav lo et mishneh ha-Torah hazot, he shall write for himself a copy of this law, al sefer, upon a scroll, milifnei ha-kohanim ha-levim, under the instruction of the Levitical priest, v'hayita imo, and it must be constantly with him, v'karabo, he must read it, kol yimei chayav, throughout his life, leman yilmad, so that he should learn leyira et Adonai Elohav, to fear the Lord his God, velishmor et kol divrei haTorah hazot, and to observe every detail of this law, v'et hachukim ha'ele, and these statutes, la'asotam, to perform them meticulously. And why do I set all of this upon your king? Levil teirum levavo, so his heart should not be too proud. Me'achav above his brethren, ulevilti sur min amitzvah yaminu to small, and that he should not depart from the commandment either to the right or to the left, leman yarich yamim amamlachto, so that he should enjoy a long reign, hu uvanav, he and his successors, bekerev Yisrael, in the midst of Israel. That's a constitutional monarchy. It's a constitutional monarchy. Limitations are placed upon his holding of land, of property, of horses, and most importantly, he is subject to the law.
There is one point, he says, banav, and that implies a succession of a dynasty.
Oh yes, well that was promised already, as we shall see. There was to be a royal line of kings.
If you have a king, you have a dynasty, don't you?
So well,
not necessarily.
Not necessarily, but there was a dynasty promised, as we shall see. We're going to discuss that in due course. But from this passage, one thing is abundantly clear. The Constitution of Israel, written by God, says that we are entitled to ask for a king, and when we do, we're entitled to have one. So why is Samuel so upset? And for that matter, why is the author of the Constitution so upset? He allowed it. Fair question. And this is a genuine problem.
He didn't encourage it, did he, in Deuteronomy?
Well, the point is this. According to our sources, and the view followed by Ramban, great Moses ben Nachman, when it says, V'amarta, and you shall say, this is a command. Just as when it says, V'ahavta adonai Elohecha, you shall love the Lord your God, which is a command, although it's expressed in the indicative and not in the imperative. V'amarta means you have an obligation to say. You have to have a king, because the king has a certain role to fulfill. Most importantly, to build the temple. So the traditional view is, yes. Later authorities didn't exactly agree. But we have a problem. You have a clash here between our constitution, its author, and its prophet. And so therefore we have to ask, why? Well, you can understand Samuel's disappointment over all of this. I mean, here he was doing a first-class job, functioning as a leader, and he's been told, collect your gold watch and go. Quite apart from which, who appointed Samuel? God. Who appointed Moses? God. Who told Moses when it was time to leave? God. So who should be telling Samuel when it's time to leave? God, not the people. So there's a usurpation here. But the real problem lies somewhere else. There were no indigenous patterns of kingship in ancient Israel. Its earliest leaders were either patriarchal leaders, patriarchal chefs, like Abraham, or they were charismatic leaders like Moses, like Samuel, or to a lesser extent the judges. There's no tradition of kingship. And therefore, in order to establish a pattern of kingship, what would they have to do? To look to the pagan nations. That's precisely what they're saying. And there lies the problem. Because among the pagans, the king is above the law. The king either perceives himself to be a god, as in Egypt, or as a son of the gods. And therefore, he is the law. He is not subject to the law. That's why the Torah, when it allows the institution of kingship, puts the tightest control on it. Most specifically, they tell the king, you are subject to the law. Be you ever so high, the law is still higher. That's the condition of Israelite monarchy. They didn't always follow it, but that was the condition of Israelite monarchy. But of course, once you look to the pagan nations, what will prevent you from copying other practices? Remember that the nation of Israel had been pretty well devoted to idolatry from the day they set foot into the land. And it was Samuel who had brought them back together under the worship of the one true God. Consequently, to start turning to the nations for your role model, this was too soon. But why does God then say, let them have it? Because the author of the Constitution has to abide by his Constitution. He gave you the right. But in so doing, Saul was doomed. Saul was doomed. There is a frightening thought. Why? When Jacob lay on his deathbed, he made a prognostication regarding the tribe of Judah. Lo yasur shevet mihuda, the royal scepter shall not depart from Judah. Umchokek miben raglav, nor a formulator of laws from among his descendants. There will be a dynasty emanating from the tribe of Judah. From what tribe did Saul come?
Benjamin.
So why didn't God, if he's going to say, have a king, why not appoint a Judahite monarch? Fair question. All right, David may have been too young, but his daddy was all right.
It might have needed... Well, Saul was very tall and big and strong, wasn't he?
Well, Ramban, once again I come back to him, gives us the most disturbing yet the most plausible answer. Because they had asked for a king at the wrong time,
he gave them a
disposable monarch. A king who could be dispensed with without infringing the promise of Lo Yasur Shevet Mi'uda, that royalty will not depart from Judah. If he gave them a Judahite king, it would be there in perpetuity. So I give you a king who is expendable. And so Saul is doomed from the moment he is anointed. That is why I say that Saul is a tragic hero of Homeric dimensions. Because we shall form a judgment on Saul, what kind of man he really was. Oh, we all know that he could go nutty, that's well known, and throw his spear at David. But we will study Saul closely when the time comes. Was that clear? So let's return now to the text. I had to elaborate on this a little, as you can understand.
A clarification about the two sons, because I thought earlier on we'd read that these two boys suddenly appeared and they may not be his natural sons.
Where do we get... Oh, you... No, but these are his sons.
They are his sons.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely his sons. They didn't follow in their father's footsteps.
Right.
This is not unknown. As I say, especially with people in public life. They're too busy with other people and haven't had enough time to bring up their own. It's a comment. And so, Vayomer Shmuel kol divrei Adonai ha'am, Samuel reports back all the words of the Lord to the people, Ashor li me'ayeto melech, who had asked of him for a king. Vayomer, and he says to them, Ze yiyeh mishpat ha'melech, this shall be the manner of a king. This is how a king behaves. Asher Yimloch Alehim, who will ultimately rule over you. Et Menechem Yikach, you'll take your sons. You'll requisition them. V'samlo b'melkavto v'farashav, and he'll put them in his chariots and in his cavalry. V'ratzu lifnei melkavto, and they'll run before his chariot. A king must have royal splendor. Where do you think it's coming from? V'lasumlo sarei alafim v'sarei chamishim, he'll appoint them as his officers over the 1,000 and over the 50s. V'lacharosh charisho, to plow his fields. V'litzo katziro, to gather in his harvest. V'laso kolei ma'amlach milchamto, kolei rikbo, he'll requisition them to make his weapons of war and his chariots. You've got skilled sons? Good, we'll have them. V'yekmeno teichem yikach, he'll take your daughters. Sorry. L'rakachot, to be his perfumers. L'tabachot, to be his bait, to his cooks. Uliofot, and to be his bakers. And he won't stop there. V'yetzidotechem, your fields. V'yetakarmechem, and your vineyards. V'zeitechem, your olive orchards. Hatovim, the best. Yikach, he will take. But now Tan Lavadav, and give them to his servants. A king will have sorry about that. A king will have courtiers, a king will have a retinue. Courtiers have to be kept faithful. Otherwise they might conspire. So how do you keep your nobility happy? With gifts. Where do you think it's coming from? He's spelling it out. V'et avdechem, v'et shivchotechem, your servants, your male and female servants, v'et bachurechem atovim, your best young men, v'et chamurechem, and your donkeys, yikach he will take, v'asal nimlachto, and use them for his work. V'et zonechem ya'asor, he'll tithe your sheep, v'atem ki'ulo la'avadim, and you will be his slaves. Uzachtem b'yomahu, and I know darn well, says Samuel, you'll cry out in that day, milifnei malkachem, on account of the king asher b'chartem lachem, which you've chosen for yourself. But forget it. V'lo ya'ane Adonai etchem b'yomahu, God won't answer you in that day. You will have made your bed, and you can lie in it. Because, you see, he is pointing something out to them, which we'll elaborate upon later. Samuel was not only an efficient form of government, he was a very economic form of government. He rode around on his donkey, was wearing the tunic his mummy made him. That was hardly an expense. Right, says Samuel, you're going to exchange me for a major, major expenditure. Be aware of it. God wants you to be aware of it. Because there's a principle in Jewish law, you don't punish without first warning. You've got your warning. Now take the consequences. And what is their response? Vayimanu am lishmo b'kol Shmuel. The people refuse to listen to Samuel. Vayomru, and they said to him, lo. No. Don't want to know. Ki melech yelai laleinu, we shall have a king over us. Vayinu gam anachnu k'chol ha'goyim, and we too shall be like all the nations. Ushvatanu ha'malkeinu, our king will judge us. V'yatzam milefaneinu, will go up before us. We want the splendor of monarchy. It makes us feel good when I go out in his gold coach, surrounded by the household cavalry, and then we know we have a king. Barovam hadrat melech. V'nilcham et milchamteinu, we want him to fight our battles. Yes.
Do they want him to be king, or do they want somebody different?
Oh, they don't want Samuel. Not at all. They want a king.
Why not, if he was such a good leader?
He's an old man.
And if they create...
Well, his dynasty's no good, then.
But then you'll have a dynasty, so his scallywag sons will take over. That is not what they want. They want a change of regime. Not unknown.
No.
They want a change of regime. They have gained a sense of national identity, and now they want the crowning glory of nationhood. And what does Samuel do? By Yomei Adun, and so Vayishma Shmuel, Samuel heard all this, et kol divrei ha'am, Vayidabrein be'oznei Adonai, and he spoke them into the Israel. Oh, God knows what's going on, but Samuel is performing his role faithfully. I come back to report. Vayomei Adonai Shmuel, and once again, God says to Samuel, Shema b'kolam. You have to listen to them. And you must appoint a king over them. Vayomer Shmuel el Anshei Yisrael, and so Samuel says to the men of Israel, Lechu ish le'iro, go every man back to his city. You have got what you want, but you don't appoint. You don't appoint. The appointment is to be made by God. That's what it says in the Torah. Som tasim alecha melech, asher yivchanu alecha bo, you shall appoint a king whom God will choose. And the rabbis say, through the agency of a prophet. Ramban, I come back to him, this great Sephardi commentator, says, no, no, doesn't mean that. It means that if you will appoint a king, and he proves to be successful, and he secures the reign of government, then you may assume that he has divine approval.
Mm-hmm. It's quite a subtle difference.
Subtle difference. Because he quotes the Talmudic maxim, anybody who occupies a position of responsibility, even the foreman over the dustman, does so with divine approval. Mitin Shemaya Mokmile. Now there's an interesting thought. Don't like that one, Stanley.
No, I don't. I don't at all.
Well, we work this way in our modern politics, don't we?
Unfortunately.
Yes, so maybe that's why you don't like it. Yes, I'm with you. Now, the process of king selection is to begin. Samuel doesn't look for anybody. Why? God will provide. And now we're going to be introduced to our tragic hero. Vayish, Binyamin, and there was a man of Benjamin, Ushmo Kish, his name was Kish, Ben Aviel, Ben Saror, Ben Bechorat, Ben Afiah, Ben Ishimini, all the way back to Benjamin, Gibor Chayil, and he was a mighty warrior. Velo Hayabain, and he had a son. Ushmo Shaul, his name was Shaul. I don't know why he was called Shaul. Maybe his mother had asked of him from God in the same way as Hannah had asked for Shmuel. Don't know. Bachur Vatov, young and handsome. Ve'inish mi b'nei Yisrael tov mimenu. No man in Israel was better than him. Mishichmo v'mala gavoa mikol ha'am. He was head and shoulders above the rest of the nation. He is a big guy, an impressive guy, and a warrior. That's just what we're looking for. Vatovadna ha'atonot l'kish avi Shaul. And Kish, Saul's daddy, lost his donkeys. Vayomer Kish el Shaul b'no, so Kish says to his son Saul, Kach na itcha et acha me'ani arim, take one of our young men, v'kum leich b'kish atono, go look for the donkeys. He went looking for donkeys and he ended up with something else. Vayavor Bahar Ephraim, he went through the territory of Ephraim. Vayavor Beeret Shalisha, went through the territory of Shalisha. Lo Matzau, didn't find them. Vayavru Beeret Shalim, he went through the territory of Shalim. Ve'ain, and they weren't there. Vayavor Beeret Shimini, passed through the territory of Benjamin. Lo Matzau, he didn't find them. Fruitless task. Heima Baal Beeret Suf, they came to the territory of Tzuf. Shaul said to his young man, Ashima was with him, Lecha v'nashuva, we had better go home. Pen yechdal avi min ha'atonot, v'dag lanu. In case my father will stop worrying about his donkeys and start worrying about us. So Saul wants to go home. Fate has it otherwise.
But he was continuing with the search. He was sending these youngsters.
No,
he was sending the boy back.
No, he was not going to continue. He's saying, we're going home.
Oh, the two of them.
Two of us. Let us nashuva. Let us go back.
Oh, okay.
But the young man is persistent. But Yomelo, and he says to him, "Inayna ish Elohim ba'ir azot." The man of God is in this city. City of Ramah. Va'ish nichbad. He's a very honorable man. Kol asher yidabe bo yavo. Any utterance he makes surely comes to pass. Ata, now neilech Hashem, let's go there. Ulay yagid lanu et darkeinu. Perhaps he will tell us the route we should take. Asher alachnu aleh, which we should go there on. Now, Samuel is supposed to have been famous from the Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south, and yet Saul is unaware of it. Moreover, I was under the impression that he's a great prophet, which he is. But it seems that I can even go to him and ask him some pretty personal advice. Where are my asses? And look how it continues. Vayomer Shaul, and Shaul said Lanaro to his young man, Vine Nelech. Okay, so we'll go to the man. Umanavilish. What can we give him? We've got to pay a consultation fee. We've used up all our bread. We have no consultation fee. Teshura is from the verb shur, to see. So teshura is to pay him for looking at us. So we have nothing to give him as a consultation fee. My tanu, because what have we got? By Yosef Anala Notichor, but the young man is persistent. He continues to say to Saul, Vayomer, Hine Nimsobiyadi Reva Shekel Kesef. I've got a silver sixpence in my hand here. Vanatati Leisha Elohim. I'll give that to the man of God. Vishdidlanu et darkeinu, and he will show us our way. Look how he's being used. I mean, we picture Samuel as the leader, and then all of a sudden he's the local soothsayer. Go along, cross his palm with silver, and I'll tell you what you should be doing. Well, we have to accept that there was a development in the nature and status of prophets. We can see that Samuel and Elijah and Elisha do play a close personal role in the life of the people, especially those in their environment. You would go to the prophet for consultation on quite mundane matters. He was not just the great prophetic leader. However, by the 9th, 8th century, the prophet is beginning to emerge as a literary figure. Isaiah, Jeremiah, who makes great pronouncements of national and international significance. I don't quite see people coming to Isaiah and say, "Have you seen my donkeys?" And this may underlie the fact about a change in the name of the office. And look what he goes on to say. Lefanim b'Yisrael. Now, originally among the Israelites, Ko amah ha'ish belechto lidrosh Elohim. This is what a man would say when he wanted to inquire of God. Lechu, come, v'neilecha, let us go ad ha-ro'eh, to the sia. Ki la-navi hayom, yikarei lefanim ha-ro'eh. Because what we call a prophet today, they used to call a sia. And you see the difference in office, difference in nature of the job. Vayom ha-shaul la-naro'. And Saul says to his young man, Tov dvarecha, your word is good, lecha, kam v'neilecha, v'yelech, let us go. V'yelechu el ha'ir. They went to the city, asher sham yishu Elohim, where the man of God was. Heima oli b'male ha'ir, as they were going up the ramp leading into the city. V'heima matzu ne'arot yotzot la'shuv ma'im. They came across a group of girls who were going out to draw water. This was the girl's task. We read that only recently, that Rivka goes down to the well. And this was a social gathering point where they could have their little chit-chat. So picture the scene. This tall, handsome, imposing young man comes to the well with all the young girls standing around, and he asks them a question. He says to them, "Vayomru lehen, hayesh bezeh haroeh." Is the seer here? And notice, not one girl answers. All of them start chipping in. They're all trying to catch his attention. Vatanenotam, they answered them. Vatumbarin, they said, "Yesh." Oh, yeah, of course he's here. Hine lefanecha, he's in front of you. Maheata, hurry now. Ki ayom balayir, because today he's coming to the city. Because there is a sacrifice for the people in the high place. Notice, short staccato statements. They're not attached to one another. Kavoachem ha'ir, when you get into the city, kaintim soon, or told you'll find him. Beterim yale abamata lechol, before he goes up to the high place to eat. Ki lo yochala am adboo, because the people will not eat until he comes. Ki hiu yuvarech hazevach. He will bless the sacrifice. Achrechein yochlu hakruim. Then afterwards, those who are invited will eat. Be'ata now, alu, go up. Ki oto ayom timsun oto, because this very day you'll find him. Now, let me pause for a moment and explain something that's going on here. Before the establishment of a central shrine, namely Jerusalem, sacrifices could be offered up on local high places. Now, you must appreciate that the high places were not only used by Israelites, I don't mean the same ones, but hills, mountains, were frequently used for the offering up of sacrifices by the pagans. But they were also permitted for use among the Israelites. And so you could have a local bama, a local high place, where a Levite, functioning as a priest, could offer up sacrifices, and the people would participate in the sacrifice and eat the sacrificial meat. Once the central shrine in Jerusalem was established, they ought to have ceased. But they didn't. They continued, and it's a constant complaint of the author of the books of Kings, Raka Bamot Lo Hoseir, King so-and-so wasn't a bad chap, but he did not put an end to the worship on high places. Truth of the matter is, he couldn't. Because when people are used to praying in a particular place, where their father and their grandfather and their antecedents had worshipped for generations, to say you can't worship here anymore, they're not going to take any notice. And so the Bama, the high place, the local shrine, existed right down to the end of the first temple period. They've even discovered temples in places like Ashdod. Temples dedicated to the one true God that ought not to have existed. There was even one in Egypt, if you please. At Aswan, where they discovered famous papyri, built in the 6th century, ultimately destroyed, because there was a group of Jewish soldiers serving in the Egyptian army at the local temple. There was a problem, however. Not only were they worshipping the God of Israel, they were worshipping the Queen of Heaven as well, which really wasn't acceptable. But they had a temple there. And a couple of centuries later, there was a temple at Heliopolis. So centralized worship was a desideratum, but not necessarily achieved. So here we've got the Bama being used quite legitimately. Now, background. Vadunai gala et ozen Shemuel yom echad lifnei bo shaul lemor. God had informed Samuel a day before Saul came, saying, Ka'et machar, this time tomorrow, I shall send you a man from the territory of Benjamin. Nagid al ami Yisrael, and you shall appoint him for a prince. You shall anoint him, rather, not appoint him, anoint him as a prince over my people Israel. Vahoshia et ami mi aplishtim, and he shall save my people from the Philistines. Kira iti et ami. I have observed my people, ki ba'at zakato elai, for their cry has come unto me. Now this is a very significant verse in a number of ways. What word has he not used? I would have said, king. You should appoint him as king. doesn't use the word king. He uses the word Nagid. What is a Nagid? That's an interesting term.
He's a rich man, doesn't he?
Well, how we use it today, a Nagid is a ruler, a prince. Shmuel HaNagid, famous Sephardi prince. In actual fact, it can be one of two words. The verb Nagad means to tell, Lahagid, Haggadah. So this is the guy who tells the other people what to do. But there is another word in Hebrew, Neged, to be in front. The Nagid is the one who passes in front of the people. He is their leader, and he will go in front of them into battle. But he doesn't use the word king. Can you guess why not? He's making a point. In reality, who is the king of Israel? God is the king. He is our king. U'malkeinu. U'moshiein. He will delegate authority to a mortal, but let the mortal realize that kingship resides in God. I will give you a portion of my royal power, but God is the King of Israel. But notice what he says here. There's a revelation now of why God says yes. Not only because it's in the Constitution. However badly the Israelites behave, God still has compassion for us. I say us, not them. They are behaving badly for a change. And yet God has compassion. Because he sees their trouble, he sees their difficulty. And what is their major trouble? The Philistines. The Philistines will either grow or diminish at various times in their strength, but their nuisance value is ongoing. And therefore there is the need for a central figure to form an army and lead them out into battle against the Philistines. I'm giving them a king so that I can relieve them of their misery. Fair enough? Ushmuel ra'a et Shaul. Now Samuel sees Saul coming towards him. You know, 6'6" in his stockings. And something's missing from the text here. Not left out by mistake. We have to assume it. That Samuel must have said to God at that moment in his mind, didn't open his mouth, in his mind, "Is that the one?" Vadonai, and the Lord answered him and said, "Hine ha'ish asher amarti lecha. This is the man of whom I told you, ze ya'atzor ba'ami. This man shall exercise restraint, authority over my people." Again, he avoids using the obvious word, "This man will rule over my people." God chooses his terminology with care. Vayigash Shaul el Shmuel betoch hashar. So Saul approaches Samuel in the midst of the gate. This is a meeting of destiny, because these two men's lives will be bound up with each other miserably for the years to come. And Saul says to the prophet, "Aginana li, please tell me, Ezer beit haroeh, where does the roeh live?"
Did he recognize him as a
no,
roeh?
This is the whole point. Don't forget. We're not looking. Right, let's start at point one. This was not an age of newspapers. So he didn't know what people looked like. I mean, if he happened to pass through your town, so you would know him.
Didn't he look different?
On the contrary.
He could dress differently?
No, he didn't. He was wearing the same tunic his mummy made him. Mm. You know, he really had economy. This guy was not impressed. Prophets, Elijah, what was Elijah known for? His leather thong.
Yeah.
They did not dress up for the job. And so Samuel may have looked no more impressive than any other elderly gentleman around the town. But destiny is bringing these two men together. And he says, "Do you know where the prophet lives?" And how does Samuel answer him? Vayan Shmuel et Shaul. And Samuel answers Saul, Vayomer, and says, Anochi haroeh, I am the prophet. And without any further question, doesn't say to you, what can I do for you? How can I help you? He immediately gives him an order and tells him, Alei, go up. Lefanai, before me, Habama, to the high place. You walk in front of me. Because everybody there knows who Samuel is. And they'll see this 6'6", handsome young man walking in front of Samuel. This is going to attract attention. Precisely what he wants. V'achaltemi mi hayom, you will eat me with this day. V'shalachticha, then will I send you baboke in the morning. V'chalashe bilvavacha agidlach, and I will tell you everything that is in your heart. Now what on earth is going on here? A person turns out of nowhere. I know we're supposed to be hospitable, but he's treating him as an honoured guest. You will go up before me. And there's an invited group. Remember, this was a private kiddush. And he's telling him, you will go up and you're going to eat me there. And they'll tell you what you've got on your mind. You think he's referring to the donkeys. Wrong. He's not referring to the donkeys. Because what's the very next verse? V'la'atonot ha'ovdot l'chan. As for the donkeys you lost. Hayom shloshet yamin. In these past 3 days. Al tasim et libecha lahem. Don't think about them anymore. Ki nimtzau. For they have been found. And then he says it. Ulami. Kol chemdat Yisrael, and to whom does all the glory, or to whom does the desire of Israel belong? On whom is the desire of Israel focused? Halo lecha, it is upon you, l'chol beit avich, on your father's house. That's quite something to say to a bloke you've never seen in your life before. There's a synergy going on here. And of course the first question is, what does he mean when he says, I'll tell you what you have in your heart? We've got some financial problems, girl problems. What's he referring to? I can only guess and see if you will accept my guess. You've got this handsome, impressive young man. The word is going around, they're going to appoint a king. It may well be. That Saul may have thought to himself, could it be me? Am I a candidate? And Samuel says to him, I know what's going on in your thoughts, and I'm going to tell you. But he uses language which leaves Saul in no doubt that he is being selected. Because Hamad is to desire. The people desire a king, and he's saying to him, the desire of the people is focused on you. And Saul falls back. You know, this is too sudden. It's one thing to have thoughts in my mind, but to have the prophet confront me in this way. So he answers, Vayan Shaul, Vayomi, and Saul answers and says, Hallo Benyamini Anochi, I'm a Benjamite. Remember the Benjamites? Bloodthirsty lot, we were almost wiped out. Mikataneshi te Yisrael, the least significant of the tribes of Israel. And my clan is the least significant of all the clans of Benjamin. I am the least of the least of the least. Why have you spoken to me in this fashion? And Samuel doesn't answer him. Doesn't answer him. Instead of which he takes him by the arm, and his young man, and takes them into the chamber. There must have been a chamber situated there at the high place, because that would have been out in the open. There was a chamber where they could sit and eat. And he gives them a place, Barosha Kruin, at the head of those who have been invited. And the people must know, who is this? What's going on here? They don't know this guy. V'heima kishloshim ish, and there were some 30 men. This really was a private kiddush. V'yom v'shmuel atabach. And then suddenly Samuel says to the cook, Tana et hamana asher natati lach. Bring out that portion which I gave to you. Asher amarti elecha simo ta'imach, which I told you to reserve with you. Keep it in reserve. Vayarem hatabach et hashok ve'aleha. And so the butcher, the cook, brings out the thigh and all that which is upon it. Vayasim lifnei Shaul, and he set it before Saul. Vayomen, he said, hinei hanishar. Sim lavanecha, this is what was left over. Put it before you. Echol eat. Ki lamboed shamur lecha, because this was reserved for you for this time, says Samuel. Lamor, because I said, ha'am karati, I have invited the people. I am the host here. Therefore, I will say who sits and what they eat. Vayochal Shaul im Shmuel bayomahu. And so Saul eats with Samuel on that day. Now there is a hidden significance here. Why the shock? Why the thigh? Nice and meaty, cooks tender, shoulder of lamb. You know, why that particular?
They porged it?
Yeah, I'm sure they would have had porging. Oh yes, we'll see that Saul was hot on kashrut.
It's to do with witnesses.
It's a significant bit, isn't
it? Definitely significant. Yes,
yes. Is it to do with the vows with Abraham and the thigh? And
no, that was Jacob and his thigh.
Yes.
No, there is significant.
That's something to do with.
Oh, yes, the Gitan Asher, the porging of the sinew. Now, I'll tell you, if you look in the Torah, the shock, the thigh, was that portion which was assigned to the priests. And he's giving it to Saul. Get the message? So look at this build-up here. It is a build-up. He meets the man, greets him, tells him, I'm going to tell you what's going on, insists that he walks in front of him, insists that he joins him in that exclusive club there at the Bamar, puts him at the head of the table, gives him that reserved piece of meat. You know, if action speaks louder than words, this is shouting. And people must be, what's going on here? What's happening? Or maybe they guess. Samuel is treating this young man in a very special way. And they know what's being sought after, so it comes as no surprise. Vayeldu ma'abama ha'ir. And they went down from the high place to the city. Vayadaber im Shaul al Agag, and he spoke with Saul on the roof of his house, somewhere where you can't be so easily overheard. If you speak to somebody inside in those days, where they didn't have closed windows, so people will look in, go up on the roof, you can talk quietly. That's why Bathsheba has her bath on the roof. People shouldn't see her. She didn't rely upon the fact that the king has a higher palace than everybody else, and therefore could take a look.
That's so.
Oh, sure.
But why she was there?
Oh, yeah, sure. That would be a private place, because you would have a parapet around the roof, and you could be private there. And as I say, somebody has a king's eye view. In this instance, they're speaking together privately. And it continues. What did Saul say to him? I don't know. We must guess that he told him of his destiny. This is what's going to happen to you. Vayashkimu, and they got up early in the morning. Vayikaalot ha-shachar, and when dawn broke, Vayikra Shmuel Shaul Agaga Lemor, Samuel again summoned Shaul to the roof, saying, Kuma, rise up now. Vashalacheka, I'm sending you away. Vayakum Shaul, and so Saul rose up. Vayetz Ushnehem, and the two of them went out. Hu Shmuel, he and Shmuel, Achutza, into the open. Hey, my Yordim Bitzayir, as they were proceeding.
Excuse me, are you finishing?
In about 2 minutes. Okay. As they were going down to the end of the city, the extremity of the city, Ushmuel Amar El Shaul, Shmuel says to Saul, Emor Lanar, Tell the young man we have all the fanenu, who shall pass in front of us. For Yahweh only did so. V'yartan, as for you, Amoth Kayom, you stand here this day. V'yashmiacha et devar Elohim, and I will now make known to you the word of God. That's quite a point at which to finish. Let's leave it hanging in the air, but next week we will continue. But there is a question, the question that I'm going to challenge you with as I challenge myself. What does Samuel feel about Saul? How would he feel? I mean, this man is displacing him.
But if he's getting old, he must realise he has
to. He's got a son. Do you think?
I think he loved, I mean, he became very fond.
We're going to see. I've asked you the €64,000 question because the relationship between these two men is something we're going to study. And the question will come back time and again. Does he resent him? You know, you've taken over from me. Or does he have an intense attachment to this man, feel sorry for him? And who will eventually have to displace him? Who will anoint a king in his place? Samuel. Two tragic figures whose lives will be intertwined to neither of their satisfaction. Okay, do you find this an interesting story? Make a good film, wouldn't it?